InPlay Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. InPlay Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello, everyone. Good to have you with us here. Week 6 of the National Football League. Dave Kellner here in the studio, joined by the Megapod host, Gil Alexander, live from Las Vegas to look ahead to the televised games this weekend. And it's, first of all, a warm welcome to Gil Alexander, live in Las Vegas. Good morning, Gil.
Good morning, Dave. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. Looking forward to week number 6 in the NFL. Can't quite believe we're here already, Gil. It seems like only 2 moments ago we were talking about, well, first of all, week number 2. It's going quickly, this NFL season.
It is. That's the nature of the beast, though. We all feel just that much more alive during football season here in the States. And it's, week 6, it's hard to believe. And yet so much has happened and so much, you know, still to come, obviously.
I actually want to start with a little bit of reflection. I think last night's game warrants that to a certain extent, Gil. We saw the Indianapolis Colts take on the Houston Texans, eventually the Colts coming out on top. But what I want to talk about is the two young, gifted American football players with an exponential amount of talent, really, in Andrew Luck and J.J. Watt. Andrew Luck, obviously quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts, and J.J. Watt holding that defensive core together for the Houston Texans. Luck is the leading passer in the NFL, and J.J. Watt, undoubtedly, in my mind, Gil, the best defensive player in the league right now. Those two going at it against each other last night was a joy to watch, really.
Well, and the NFL's thrilled about it, too, because they finally had a close Thursday night game, Thursday night here in the States. Though it didn't look that way after the first quarter, did it? The Colts leading 24-0. It looked like another Thursday night blowout. So this is the closest by far of all the Thursday night games this year in the end. But, you know, someone asked me yesterday, it's funny you posed that question, Dave, a friend of mine who is English, who happened to be in town, asked me what I thought about, you know, Andrew Luck in terms of what he will end up being when all is said and done. And I think it's pretty clear now that Andrew Luck is going to be one of the all-time greats. There's no question that barring, you know, some catastrophic injury, and I don't even like to say that out loud to put it in the air, but barring that event, Andrew Luck is going to be mentioned along with the greats. And we can say that about him after just, you know, a short time in his career. J.J. Watt is interesting because we don't get to say that about defensive players, you know, very often, especially until a career has sort of gone 10, 15 years, defensive linemen anyway, and linebackers also for that matter, but certainly someone in J.J. Watt's position, we don't really get to say that about, but he is just such an impactful player and creates such havoc in so many different ways that, although I can't say it with the confidence I say it about Luck, he's certainly destined, you would think, for enshrinement in Canton, which is our Hall of Fame as well. But, yeah, they're a joy to watch, and we certainly saw them in their full glory last night.
I don't even know how good that Houston Texan defense is right now. If you take J.J. Watt away from there, they would have been absolutely shredded last night. There's little doubt about that. Gil, and two incredible players, incredible talents, both fun to watch. And at the moment, Gil, Andrew Luck ahead of Peyton Manning in the progression that he made in the early part of his career. Right now, if you go inside the numbers, Andrew Luck ahead of where Peyton Manning was at this point in his career.
Yeah, Peyton Manning had I think his first season, he played for a really, really bad football team in Indianapolis. And a lot of these guys in the NFL, all the greats, you know, most of their trajectory is that their first year in the league, they tend to be very high draft picks, if not the number one pick, which was the case with Peyton Manning, which was the case with Andrew Luck, which was the case with, say, John Elway. So they tend to get drafted to really bad teams. The difference is that in Andrew Luck's case, they weren't bad from the beginning. You know, he was able to take them to the playoffs really right out of the chute. And the commonality between Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck this season, projecting forward now, is that neither of them have running games to rely on. And so the success that they both have now is pretty amazing in that they don't have that to rely on. They don't have that security blanket. So defenses are pretty keyed in on the passing game, and yet they still are successful. But, yeah, most of these great quarterbacks, these eventual Hall of Famers, Troy Aikman is another one with the Cowboys. First year, they were terrible. They were 1-15. Not in Andrew Luck's case. What a career so far.
Absolutely. That was game number one of week six of the NFL. Let's have a look at the televised games now. And, Gil, we start off with the Detroit Lions at the Minnesota Vikings. Sunday, 6 p.m. UK time. And for the first time on these podcasts, Gil, no line for this game with the doubts about Calvin Johnson. His participation in the match on Sunday night is questionable at the moment. And because of this, no line. And it's difficult for the bookmakers to set a line right now because he is such an important player to the Detroit Lions.
He really is, and he's one of the very few players in football that's not a quarterback that has an impact on the line. So typically quarterbacks, if we're uncertain about them, obviously they're going to keep the bet off the board, the line off the board, rather, and there's understandably reasons for that because quarterback has such a huge impact on the game. Well, very few non-quarterbacks, but Calvin Johnson is absolutely one of them at wide receiver for the Lions. He said, Johnson did, that he's going to need rest and treatment to recover from his high right ankle sprain. And he suffered that against Green Bay last month. Now, for fantasy players who have Calvin Johnson on their teams, the problem is that you've had to keep lining him up and playing him every week because they didn't take him out of the lineup. So you essentially had this dud player every week. Well, finally they got to the point, and he wasn't performing. Finally, they've gotten to the point in Detroit where they're like, well, head coach Jim Caldwell said that he would finally consider sitting him, and it appears that that's going to be the case this weekend. We do this here Friday morning stateside, so about 48 hours before game time, that's what it looks like. He missed his third straight Wednesday practice, but he was one of four Lions who wasn't at practice on Wednesday. Reggie Bush was another one. He's also dealing with an ankle injury. So the Lions are banged up across the board. But, yeah, Johnson's the big one because in five games, he only has 22 catches and for 348 yards and two touchdowns. That is well below his standard production level. And if I'm not mistaken, he had those two touchdowns week one.
Yeah.
So he has really done nothing since of any huge impact other than acting as a decoy on the field. But after a while, teams aren't going to buy that either.
We're seeing a different type of Lions team in the early stages of this season as well, Gil. We're used to this explosive offense, and they have been, as you've mentioned, banged up and halted a little bit by the injuries. It's materialized differently for the Lions this season so far. Matt Stafford still being productive under center, not really hitting the heights we are necessarily used to, Gil. Is that down to a lack of protection so far this season?
Yeah, pretty much. You hit it, Dave. It's, you know, the fact that Matthew Stafford, the last two seasons, he was in the top five in terms of the least sacked quarterbacks on a percentage of dropback basis in the NFL. Top five both in 2012 and in 2013. This year, just flip that completely. He has been sacked on 8.3% of his dropbacks, 8.3%. So a little less frequently than 1 in 10 times. That's the highest rate in the entire NFL. In contrast, you know, he was sacked six times, by the way, against the Bills last week, six. I mean, that's going to impact the game for sure. The Vikings on defense, they rank 12th in the league, sacking the opposing quarterback. So that's about 6% of the time. So that's something to watch in this game, whatever the line is. Can the Lions change that? Matthew Stafford's running for his life, and he's not being successful in running for his life. He's sort of losing it more often than not. And the Vikings are certainly going to try to continue that trend on Sunday.
Problems for the Vikings, though, as well, Gil. No Adrian Peterson still. They're going to have to rely on Teddy Bridgewater, who's likely, almost certainly, going to be back at quarterback for the Vikings. I think the less said about Christian Ponder's performance against the Packers, the better here. But with with the Vikings having to rely on Bridgewater without Peterson, it's going to be tough for them, because they're still statistically pretty mediocre on defense. So they're going to have to get Bridgewater going. I wonder about their defense skill, because you look at who they've played the past 4 weeks. They've been up against Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, Aaron Rodgers. They've not had a particularly a schedule that you think, wow, they can really defend against these quarterbacks. They've been playing against elite quarterbacks in the early part of this season.
An excellent point. I mean, it really is. You can't get much better competition than that. You know, the only issue, and you're right, so you would figure that Minnesota, especially given the stats we just talked about with Stafford getting sacked this season, that they'd have some success. The only issue is, you know, they have their rookie quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater, and I sort of, when I think about defenses versus a quarterback in this game, I kind of gravitate to that side of the ball, because while Teddy Bridgewater in, you know, that game against the Falcons a couple weeks ago looked great, you wonder if that wasn't a function of preparation. The fact that Matt Castle started that game for the Vikings, the Falcons weren't prepared to play Teddy Bridgewater, and so they got a different look than they were prepared for, at least what they were anticipating all week long. The difference being that the Lions, who have a really solid defense as well, and Ndamukong Suh is one of the most dominant defensive players in the league as well for the Lions, they've got a rookie quarterback to prepare for 7 days, and that, you know, historically is something you want to bet on all the time. So it's tough. You know, even if Calvin Johnson, even if we knew about Calvin Johnson, the status of this game, even though there's no line right now, if there was a line, I'm not sure I'd have any conviction on this either way because of that. We don't know what we're getting in Bridgewater quite yet, and you might want to just keep your money in your pocket for another week or two when handicapping the Vikings.
Yeah, good point. So not leaning either way in this matchup, despite not having a line to have a look at right now either. So the Lions at the Vikings, Sunday 6 p.m. For the game time there. As a quick aside before we move on to the Cowboys at the Seahawks, which is the 9:25 p.m. game UK time here on Sunday, I was listening to your Guessing the Lines podcast on Monday, Gil. You made some really interesting, I found them incredibly interesting, about the spread not mattering in the NFL. I couldn't believe some of the numbers you quoted on that podcast. For listeners to this podcast that haven't checked out the Guessing the Lines podcast, can you just recap some of those statistics that you've got about the spread not mattering in the NFL? I thought they were fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, I'm flattered that you listened to the show, Dave. Thank you, sir. Yeah, I've always got to be careful when I couch it that way. The phrase, the spread doesn't matter, I always have to preface it by saying, you know, the spread, obviously, the line given for every game, it matters a whole bunch in terms of getting the best number. So take the 49ers and the Chiefs game last week. When I was on your show, I said, absolutely, I'm all over the Chiefs. And at the time, it was +6. So I was right about that game based on the number when I was on your show. Well, by game time, that line was 4 or 4.5. So yep. If people had bet the Chiefs right before kickoff, they would have actually lost that game. So obviously the number really does matter. I don't want to give the impression that getting the best of the line doesn't matter. But what you're referring to is the line, what I was quoting was, let's take the closing line. So the line before kickoff for every single game thus far this season. And historically, so since 1978, and this is quoted from a great service called Spreadopedia, since 1978, regular season winners in the NFL cover 83% of the time. So what that means is that underdogs win outright. There's three outcomes in an NFL game. The underdog wins outright, the favorite wins and covers, or the favorite wins but doesn't cover. Only the last of those three subsets does the spread actually come into play. So the first two categories, underdogs winning outright and favorites winning while covering, the spread actually doesn't come into play. And so those two categories, underdogs winning, favorites winning and covering, that happens 83% of the time during the regular season, historically. This season so far, that's even higher than that. Only 9 out of the first 78 games of the NFL season have favorites won but not covered. The other 69 outcomes, the spread hasn't mattered. So 9 out of 78 comes out to 11.54%. Contrast that with the 17% historically. So we're even below the historic rate of the spread mattering. So this season, literally 9 games has the spread matter. Only in 9 games has a favorite won but not covered. The upshot of that is, I say to listeners, you know, sometimes maybe just figuring out in your head who the winner is going to be is how you ought to bet this. Because more often than not, the whole exercise of trying to figure out, well, do they cover, you know, more often than not, it's just pick the winner and you'll win the bet.
Yeah.
Because that happens, you know, every time except for 9 times thus far this season. We'll see if that normalizes as time goes on, obviously, but that's been the case through 5 weeks plus.
Yeah, which
amazing.
It is absolutely fascinating, and that's why if you fancy an underdog in the NFL, got to have a little bit on the money line as well if you're playing the spread.
That's exactly right. So if you do, as you put, fancy, I love that. I love that. If you fancy the underdog, absolutely right, Dave. What you're saying is true. You owe it to yourself to play it straight on the money line, given that. Sure.
Let's have a look at the 9:25 p.m. game Sunday evening here in the UK. Dallas Cowboys at the Seattle Seahawks. The Cowboys 3-1 on the money line. The Seahawks 1-4. And this number set at 8 at the moment. The Seahawks minus 8, 10-11. The Cowboys plus the 8 points at 10-11. A cracking NFC clash, this one. The 4-1 Dallas Cowboys go to the 3-1 Seattle Seahawks. And how has this line moved, first of all, Gil, or has this been set at 8 throughout the week?
Yeah, it's pretty much been 8, which is a, you know, what we like to call a dead number. You know, it's not a key number. It's not 3, it's not 7, it's not 10. 8 is that no man's land between 7 or 10, which is, you know, something that usually will flutter a little, but it hasn't. It has stayed at 8 pretty much all week long and still there right now.
I'm struggling, Gil, to comprehend how the Cowboys are 4-1 this season so far. You look at that defense from a personnel perspective and you don't see any big names in there. You just think they are going to be getting hammered on defense every single week, but they've just done enough. They've just been average enough, this defensive core, to allow Tony Romo and DeMarco Murray to affect games, and that's why they go into this game 4-1.
Yeah, well, that's going to take a one-week hiatus at a minimum because Seattle's going to do their thing. This is a Seattle game at home, and so every time we come on and we do a game that's at Seattle, we are sort of contractually obligated to say right up front, Russell Wilson at home, 19-1 straight up, 15-5 career against the spread at home. That's including the playoffs. So that's sort of the headline every time you do a Seahawks game at home. But to your point, you know, the Cowboys, last year they were 8-8. The year before that, they were 8-8. The year before that, they were 8-8. In fact, if you take the Dallas Cowboys all the way back to 1997, from the beginning of the 97 season all the way to the end of last year, they are exactly a 500 football team. That is their lot here in the better part of the last two decades. And this year, as you point out, 4-1, can they keep it going? By the way, after the Seattle game, I actually think they can reel off a few more wins. Schedule's favorable. But they've bitten off, you know, they're going to bite off a lot more than they can chew in this one. They have been solid on defense, but as much as we think that when we think about the Seahawks, we tend to think about the Seahawks defense, but it's actually the Seahawks offense thus far this season that has been more impressive, and that's what this Cowboys defense has got to go up against. The Seahawks are number 7 in the league in a metric called offensive expected points added. So what that is, it's real briefly, not to put your listeners to sleep, but expected points added, you know, is based on 10 years of NFL play-by-play data. And ESPN, the biggest sports network here, they created a formula that assigns an expected points value to a team with the ball at the start of each play based on game situation. So down, distance to go, field position, home field advantage, time remaining, it's all factored in there. And the Seahawks offense has been great, number 7 in the league in that category, expected points added. So the Cowboys defense, they've got to face that, and it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah, I can see you can see Marshawn Lynch just having an absolute field day, can't you? And you talked about Russell Wilson at CenturyLink Field and how productive he's been here. This is one of the biggest home advantages in the NFL, isn't it, in terms of affecting the spread? The Seahawks at home, you've got to ratchet that up a few points.
Yeah, the standard for years was that NFL home field advantage equals 3 points. And only in recent years have people sort of come to the conclusion, you know, maybe it's not uniform across the board. It's actually not at all some places, let's say Jacksonville. And in Seattle, it's actually a little more than 3 points. I'd say it's maybe 4, 4.5 points. If you ever go to a game there, it is an unbelievable atmosphere. And before I forget, you mentioned Marshawn Lynch, Dave. So any discussion of the Seattle offense ought to keep him in mind. Yards per carry this season. As much as people are talking about DeMarco Murray of the Cowboys and the Cowboys running game, Seahawks are number 1 in the league in that category. So there is just no weakness.
Okay, so you fancy the Seattle Seahawks to win the game, Gil. Do you think they cover the spread, -8?
It's not one of my favorite plays on the board, to be honest with you. You know, 8, I actually see it 8.5 now here in town. But that's a lot of points, you know. The 8.5 is a lot of points, even though it's in Seattle. I would lean Seahawks, but it's not one of my best bets on the board. I certainly would not take the Cowboys, let's put it that way.
The total points there, by the way, 46.5. The total points, under 10-11, over 10-11. Just before we move on from that game, DeMarco Murray on pace at the moment, Gil, to break all sorts of rushing records in the NFL. We've talked about whether Tony Romo can keep it going. Can DeMarco Murray keep it going? This is going to be a big test for him against that Seahawks D.
Yeah, I would say no would be my answer to that. The Cowboys, as I've liked to quote on my show, they've run it 63.5% of the time this year on early downs when leading, and that's the second highest rate in the NFL. So they were 47.8% in that category over the previous 5 seasons. So it's a concerted effort to give the ball to DeMarco Murray, and it's working out great for the Cowboys. In fact, their rate on third down conversions is the highest in the NFL. That's really one of the sleepy stats of handicapping the NFL that people should focus on. Their third down conversion rate is 55.56%. That's the best in the league. So that will normalize. That will regress. And against the Seahawks, it will regress quickly. Despite that commitment to the run, the problem for the Cowboys in this game is that the Seahawks allow just 2.6 yards per rush attempt. That's the best in the NFL. So Dallas's strength is going up against one of the Seahawks' strengths. Now, the caveat to that is that the Seahawks haven't really played opponents that run the ball well. Their opponents thus far average 3.7 against everyone else. The Cowboys have averaged 4.9 yards per carry, sixth best in the league. As I mentioned, the Seahawks happen to be number 1 in that category in offense. But yeah, they're going up against the number 1 defense in the league in that category. They're going to get stifled. And I'll, you know, gun to head, I would take the Seahawks here. But again, 8.5, it's a lot of points.
On to the New York Giants at the Philadelphia Eagles. This is the late game Sunday night in the States, early Monday morning UK time. This is an NFC East clash, and it's one of the most intense rivalries in the NFL. The line at the moment set at +3. The New York Giants With extra juice, 5-6. The Philadelphia Eagles -3 at even money. On the money line, the Giants 5-4. The Eagles 20-29. And the total points bang on 50. Under 10-11 and the over 10-11. The Giants come into this 3-2. The Eagles 4-1. And in recent history, Gil, this is a matchup that the Eagles have dominated. They've gone 9-3 against the spread in the last 12 meetings. But after an 0-2 start for the Giants, they've caught fire and they've won the last three games in succession. And that means this is suddenly, Gil, a big game as far as this division is concerned.
Sort of like last week. I mean, last week on Sunday night, we had the really intriguing matchup between the Patriots and the Bengals. And I mentioned that, from my observation, that was the game that was the biggest lightning rod. You had about 50% of people on each side of that game, and we saw how it turned out with New England rising to the occasion.
Yeah,
I think this has been a tough one for people, too, this Sunday night game as well. Not really in quite in the same way, but just because we don't know what Eagles team we'll see at this point. We kind of are getting a sense for the Giants now, but we're a little less clear on what we'll get with the Eagles. Since the third week of the season, you mentioned the Giants were 0-2. Well, if you look at that expected points added stat I just mentioned from ESPN, since week three, the Giants are number one in the NFL on offense in that stat. The Eagles, the vaunted Eagles offense, number 27. So what's that? That's sixth to last in the league. And defensively, the Giants are number six in that category, Eagles number 22. So yeah, things have really turned for these two teams. Now, that's what's happened. The question is, you know, what happens on the field Sunday night? And I'm of the mind that the Eagles sort of get it together. They have scored, have the Eagles, 7 touchdowns this year via defense or special teams. No other team in the league has scored more than 2 of those. So the Eagles have definitely been the beneficiary of, shall we call them, unorthodox touchdowns thus far.
Yes.
But they're 4-1 based on that. That's their record. Those wins are banked. And they get to sort of recalibrate now, and their goal is going to get their star running back, LeSean McCoy, more involved because he really hasn't done much. So while the Eagles haven't looked good, their potential to get much, much better is really there. And at 2.5 earlier in the week, I loved the Eagles. At 3, it's a little tougher, but I still like the Eagles.
At the Eagles -3 at even money, what's going on with LeSean McCoy this season so far, Gil? Because You mentioned that their production is relatively weak, given the standards that he's set in the NFL in the past. He's averaging only 2.9 yards per carry, yet to rush for 100 yards in any given game this season. I suppose there are two ways of looking at this. Has he regressed as a running back, or will things level out and he is due a breakout game now, Gil?
He's due a breakout game. You know, whether it happens Sunday night or not, who knows? And I think because the reason that I hedge on that is because we tend to underemphasize injuries on the offensive line. But much of New England's troubles with their trade of Logan Mankins, that wasn't an injury in that case, but a trade, much of their trouble can be traced to what I think is a ill-fated trade of one of their Pro Bowl guards. And in this case, the Eagles are suffering from injuries to 2 key offensive linemen. It's been more than 2, but 2 key guys are still going to be out Sunday night. They're not coming back for another month, and that's center Jason Kelce and guard Evan Mathis. I think more than anything, that's affected LeSean McCoy's ability to gain yards and has caused, you know, a Chip Kelly offense that is already more of an unpredictable entity to have to adjust even more with McCoy not being successful. But I think that's injury-based more than anything. I think Shady McCoy is going to have himself a good year when all is said and done.
Mm. And a quick word on Nick Foles as well at quarterback, because last year he played as if he was superhuman at times, Nick Foles. This year, not quite the same sort of production. He's struggling with mid to long-range passes. Passes over 10 yards, he's really faltered in terms of his accuracy this season.
Last year, 27 touchdown passes against 2 picks. That's pretty much unheard of. So we knew he wasn't going to do that well again, but it's really flipped. You know, he had a 119.2 passer rating, which is really good last year. This year, he's 23rd in the league at 82.5. Those numbers, if they don't mean anything to you, trust trust me when I say they still don't mean a lot to the American sports fan either. It's not good, though. It's not particularly good. And on the long passes you refer to, let's say passes of at least 21 yards in the air, just a 53.3 rating on passes. He's gotten picked off a league high 4 times on 31 attempts on those long passes. That's also the worst in the NFL. And meanwhile, Eli Manning, who people already, you know, and this is the story of Eli Manning's career, just when people are ready to bury him, he gets all Eli Manning on us. You know, he's completed 70.1% of his passes this year. He's got the 115.2 rating during the 3-game win streak. He's thrown 8 touchdown passes, just 1 pick over that stretch, and he's spreading the ball around. 5 different Giants have at least 10 catches. So that's what Nick Foles is the guy who now has to go up against the Giants defense that has a league-high 8 picks. And they're limiting opposing quarterbacks to a 76.0 rating for the NFL's third-best mark. So, again, on paper, it's one of those things where you're like, wow, looks like the Giants all the way here. But as you pointed out at the very beginning, this is a division game.
Yep.
It's at Philly. It's at night. And the Eagles are sort of a sleeping giant. I don't want to make them out to be the Seahawks or the 49ers. But in terms of the NFC East, they have really been a sleeping giant. And the Giants, I'm not buying it. I don't know if it's just Eli's expression, Dave. I always like to say that he's going to be the first player in the history of the league whose facial expression keeps him out of the Hall of Fame with 2 Super Bowl titles. But I just don't buy what I'm seeing with the Giants. And I must say they don't have their starting running back, Rashad Jennings, for this game. He sprained his MCL. So Andre Williams will be back there. I don't know that that's a big drop-off, but that's something to look out for in this one as well.
Spot on as well. He just doesn't look like an American football player, Eli Manning. He just doesn't look like an American football player. You've got to be concerned for the Giants as well, because they need to produce these sorts of performances with Eli Manning in the playoffs. That's how they've done it in the past. They've snuck into the playoffs, and then Eli Manning's gone on a ridiculous hot streak. He's doing it early this season, which is a concern, because it means he will not produce in the playoffs if they happen to get there. That is the New York Giants.
That's sort of been the story of his career, right? Absolutely. Yeah. He's the one guy, you know, 2 Super Bowl titles. They don't throw around Super Bowl titles. But he's got 2 of them, and he'll always have that. And so any knock on Eli Manning is quickly followed by, but he did win 2 Super Bowls,
yeah.
So I guess I don't know much, you know?
He just shows his rings, Gil, any time.
Exactly what he does. That's right.
You mentioned the 49ers there. Final game we're going to look at is the game on Tuesday morning, UK time, 1:30 a.m., San Francisco 49ers at the St. Louis Rams. The 49ers 4-7. The Rams are 31-20. The spread here, the San Francisco 49ers -3, heavily weighted towards the 49ers, though, 4-5. The St. Louis Rams +3, odds against, at 21-20. The total points has been set at 43.5, 10-11, the under, and 10-11, the over. Start by talking about the line set at 3. Pretty standard number here, Gil, but as mentioned, heavily weighted in the 49ers' favor.
Yeah, this crept to 3.5 at one point during the week. We may yet see 3.5 by kickoff. But yeah, back to 3 at 3 with extra juice here in favor of the Niners as we do this again Friday morning stateside and Friday night with you guys. I'm going to make this just like last Monday night, Dave. I'm going to make this my lock of the week as well. We had the Seahawks last week.
Yep.
And I'm no conspiracy theorist, but maybe flash back to that game for a second. I'm no conspiracy theorist, but if there was ever a game where you thought the NFL and the referees didn't want the Seahawks to cover, boy, was that the game. I mean, they just kept calling back touchdowns on phantom penalties left and right, and we still covered. So,
well, Percy Harvin there, did he have 3 touchdowns called back, which must be the first time that's ever happened in the NFL?
Oh, I think there's no question that's the first time it's ever happened. For one player to have 3 touchdowns called back, absolutely, especially a wideout. That was unbelievable. But, you know, I'm a Redskin fan. At no point during that game did I think the Redskins were going to win. Seahawks, obviously, superior. I feel the same way about this game. I love the 49ers here. And I mentioned on my show, this is interesting now, because the American betting audience, I don't know if you have this in the UK with your football bettors. But as the years go on, the public bettors on football in the U.S. get smarter and smarter. But I believe, and I said this on my show, I almost think that the pendulum has swung too much. So in other words, it's very sharp here. It's conventionally sharp to say, ooh, it's a home dog on a Monday night. You got to bet the home underdog. And that historically is a great proposition. This is one of those games where I almost think, if you think that way, it's a sign that the pendulum swung too much. Because I just think the Niners are so much better of a football team than the Rams. I love the Niners here on the road giving three, and there's lots of reasons for that. And chief among them is this, and I get this from a gentleman named Mike Sando, who I rely on a lot. He is an advanced stats guy at ESPN, and he has a great stat for this game. Talk about big plays. So let's define big plays. And I think I talked about this last week for another team. But big plays are runs over 10 yards, passes over 20 yards for our purposes. Well, the Niners, in just five games, have 38 of those. So an average of 7.6 times per game, they have a big play. That's a lot of big plays in a game. They've only allowed 17 of them. So the differential there for the Niners is plus 21 in this big play category. Well, that's first place in the league. That's the best in the NFL. And next best isn't even close. The Seahawks, not surprisingly, would be next best in that category at plus 12, the difference between the number they've had and the number of those big plays that they've allowed. So it goes from plus 21 all the way down to plus 12. The Rams, for their part, are minus 2. So the point is that the Niners, even at 3-2, with all the turmoil surrounding this team, and we can get into that if you want, they're still an excellent football team and an explosive one. I think the Niners win this one going away.
Okay, confident pick with the 49ers, minus 3 at the 4-5. Let's get stuck into that then, Gil. Let's talk about Jim Harbaugh and the controversy. Controversy is probably the wrong word, but surrounding him at the moment. Many people questioning whether he's going to be head coach at this 49ers football club for very long. Is that a reservation that you've got, given that there is a lot of things going on behind the scenes at the moment that could affect the play on Monday night, Tuesday morning?
I think it's an overplayed angle in terms of our handicapping on a week-to-week basis. I mean, I really do believe that he will not be their head coach next season. I think anyone you ask pretty much is in agreement on that Jim Harbaugh has probably worn out his welcome in San Francisco. Now, we don't know the details. We're not in the locker room, and we're certainly not in their front office to know exactly how big of a raving lunatic Jim Harbaugh must be for him to alienate all these folks.
I think we can guess that you can have a fair good go at guessing how much of a loon. I'd say he's close to the edge of the cliff, Gil.
Well, he's got to be, Dave, and I'll tell you why. Because from the beginning of the 2012 season, when he took over as the 49ers head coach, they are 44-16-1. 44-16-1. Now, there are 31 other franchises. I don't know about 31. There's a couple of them that have done that well, I suppose, like Seattle. That's probably the list.
Yep.
Or maybe Denver as well. But there's about certainly 29, 30 other teams that would take 44-16-1 in a heartbeat. But apparently, he must be so tough to get along with that even that's not good enough to keep him around. But on a week-to-week basis, I don't think it affects the football team. Winning is the tonic. So now if they were 0-4 at this point, I would change my tune on that, and I would say, okay, yes, it's obviously something that's spiraling. But as long as you keep winning, and they're 3-2 at this point, that's just not something that they think about. They compartmentalize that very well on a week-to-week basis. And I think the case will be no different. I think they'll force the Rams. You know, the Rams like to run the football. The Niners are great against the run. They're going to have to rely on Austin Davis, the rookie quarterback for the Rams, who, by the way, has been very, very good thus far. I don't want to take anything away from Austin Davis. But, you know, all his yardage will be gained, I believe, in this game in sort of crunched, in meaningless time where the Niners have already built a lead. So you know, the Niners have the strength everywhere. The Rams were typically a team that relied on their defense, but they don't have Chris Long this year. Robert Quinn hasn't really gotten it going. So, yeah, I think the Harbaugh effect, while over the long term might spell the end for him in San Francisco, it won't matter this week.
Yep. Fair call, Gil. The San Francisco 49ers -3 at 4-5. We could see the 49ers playing what is affectionately called 49ers football as well this week, establishing the run a little bit more. It's been a strange season for the 49ers because in some games they've had, Gil, they've just allowed Colin Kaepernick to do whatever he wants to do, throw the ball at will. But surely coming into this at 3-2, they are going to run against this Rams defense that is 30th in the NFL. They've got to, haven't they, this week?
Yeah, third in the NFL, as you say, with 145 rushing yards per game. That's what the Niners have at their disposal. The Rams enter this game tied for 29th with 152.5 rushing yards allowed. So that doesn't bode well for the Rams. The Niners are second in the league, on the other hand, in terms of yards allowed on defense. 73.8, just 73.8 on the ground. So, yeah, even on paper, no matter how you sort of slice it, doesn't work out well for the Rams here. Mm-hmm. Yet, the number is only 3, and that tends to scare people because, again, home dog Monday night. Doesn't scare me, this game. I'll put my money on the Niners here.
Bet of the week, the 49ers. What about you've got the full range of the schedule to choose from here. What about the shock of the week, Gil?
A very good question. We were able to, I guess, hit on the Chiefs technically last week, although if you waited to bet it, you didn't hit on the Chiefs in terms of the shock of the week. This is a tough week. Last week we had so many big spreads across the board, and so there were so many games to choose from. I could have picked from several of them. This is one of those weeks where every time I thought of a shock of the week, I said, well, will that even be shocking if I say that? You know, would it be shocking to say that Cleveland, as a 1.5-point favorite, beats the Steelers? Well, no, because they're the favorite. So that even that's not shocking to pick the Browns. So ultimately, you know, I had to gravitate towards the New York Jets to have any kind of shock value. I wasn't going to pick Dallas and Seattle, believe me. The Jets are now 9-point, 9.5-point, somewhere in there, underdogs at home against the Broncos. This opened at 7, and the public just kept betting the Broncos and betting the Broncos all the way up to 10, and now a little money has come back on the Jets. I don't like the Jets to win here. I'm not crazy, Dave. Let's not get nuts. But I do like the Jets to cover, if asked about a shock of the week. I do like the Jets to cover, and the reason here is I think in boxing parlance they have a puncher's chance. And I think any time you have a defense like the Jets, now, I say that, and of course I know the reaction by some is going to be, wait a minute, didn't the Jets just get run over by the Chargers last week? They did. Let's try to forget that. Before that game, the Jets had a great run defense, and the Broncos don't run the ball at all. They have no running game whatsoever. So that part of the Broncos' offense is effectively removed. Now, Peyton Manning, obviously, good enough not to need it most of the time. But if you're one-dimensional, you're one-dimensional, whether you're Peyton Manning or Joe Montana or whomever, you want to have a threat of a running game. They don't have that. And so I think the Jets can keep this a little closer than that number. 9 is a lot of points, and I like the Jets here getting all those points. I think they can rebound, especially after just how poorly they played last week. I think Rex Ryan, who I don't have tremendous amount of respect for, I think they sort of circle the wagons and keep this closer than the spread against the Broncos.
Michael Vick, Gil, not doing himself many favors with his quotes following that loss to the Chargers. He came in at halftime for Geno Smith. He was quoted as saying, maybe I didn't prepare or I wasn't prepared, but I'll tell you what, it won't happen again. It might not happen again because he might not get another chance in the NFL.
That could very well be. On the other hand, I don't know. I thought that was kind of refreshing. You don't really hear an American athlete come out and say that, like, yeah, I really wasn't prepared at all. Sorry about that, guys. You know, especially when his job is, here's the thing, if the quarterback goes out, you're in, buddy. But, you know, in his defense, and it's not much of a defense, but let me try to make one, is that his coach, Rex Ryan, who I just referred to, every week, you know, when everyone was like, hey, are you going to make a quarterback change? Rex Ryan would come out and he'd say, nope, Geno Smith's my guy. You know, so Michael Vick probably thought to himself, well, unless this guy breaks both of his legs, you know, I'm not playing. So I guess that was what his preparation was like. He was like, well, I'm not getting in. So when he finally did get in, as you point out, I think he was, don't quote me on this, but I think he was 4-11. He did nothing out there.
No.
And you're right. While he says he will, that won't happen again, that might be, you know, not his choice moving forward. We'll see.
Okay, the Jets plus the 9 points at home against the Denver Broncos on Sunday at 6 p.m. Gil, as always, an absolute pleasure speaking to you on this Friday, and enjoy week 6 in the NFL.
You too, Dave. It's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.